You're listening to 89.9 KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Time now for your weekend film reviews, including an unauthorized queer superhero parody that almost never made it to theaters. We'll have more on that controversy later. Here now is Christy Lemire, film critic for RogerEbert.com and co-host of the YouTube channel Breakfast All Day. And Sean Edwards is film critic for Fox TV in Kansas City and co-founder of the African American Film Critics Association. Hello, both of you.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Okay, let us start with a new vampire horror film. It's called Abigail, and it follows a group of kidnappers that takes kids for ransom, and it's based on the 1966 film Dracula's Daughter.
So whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
Do you know what a pinky promises? If you behave and do as we say... I pinky promise you, it'll all be over soon.
Joey?
Yeah?
I'm sorry about what's gonna happen to you.
Yeesh, Sean. Okay, so then the child becomes the monster. Every parent knows that when that happens. So tell us more about this movie.
Well, I will say this first. It's loosely based on Dracula's Daughter, the way that New Coke was loosely based off the original Coke. The premise on the surface, I can see why this movie got greenlit. The premise on the surface is there, but the filmmakers do very little with anything, especially the ballet, because they really only use the ballet like to enhance her fighting style during the set pieces, but nothing more than that happens. I mean, this movie is basically designed to scare teens and mostly appeal to people who haven't seen very many movies because... It's all pretty much like stereotypical stuff you see in horror movies. They really don't enhance any of the horror tropes. The one thing that is fun about the movie is when the action starts, it is pretty cool. And there is more blood used in this movie than plot. I mean, actually lots of blood. I think the filmmakers use more corn syrup than at a Coca-Cola bottling plant. I mean, it's everywhere. Is it entertaining? Yes. Is it completely stupid? Yes. Is it scary? Somewhat. But the scariest thing is actually how well the movie works, despite being a super weak narrative and delivering nothing that you haven't seen before.
Christy, one more question. Is it worth seeing?
I mean, it's really fun. And there are moments in this movie that you're probably going to want to see with other people because they're just so insane. There's a thing that happens. I don't want to say what it is because when it happens the first time, it's like, whoa, what did I just see? And then they do it again. And then they do it again. And so that's sort of indicative of how the whole film flows. Like things that seem novel and cool eventually grow tiresome and repetitive. It has some cool... camera work off the top. The title sequence uses Swan Lake and her ballet performance to really knowingly over the top melodramatic effect. But it's so much like these filmmakers' previous film, Ready or Not. This is a very similar structure. So you've kind of already seen this before. But I had fun for a while.
What's with ballet being evil? From the red shoes to Black Swan to this? Ballet can't
always.
Get a break.
It's beautiful and terrifying.
Oh, ballet is always evil.
All right. Next up, we have a new action comedy film from director Guy Ritchie. It's called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. It's based on the real story of a group of British soldiers that conducted espionage in Germany during World War II. And here's a bit from the trailer.
If I'm to do this, I'll need my own team. You won't like them. They're all mad.
They'll need to be.
This is an unsanctioned, unauthorized mission. If we fail, England will be condemned to a lifetime under the German boot.
All right, Christy, the star is Henry Cavill and I guess Queen as well, even though Queen wasn't around during World War II. What did you think?
So this is a weirdly sedate Guy Ritchie movie. Everything about this would seem to cry out that this is Guy Ritchie's oeuvre. It's like fantastic looking men and they're wisecracking and they have this extremely violent mission that they have to go on. But compared to the best examples of this kind of movie that he's made in the past, going all the way back to Snatch or Rock and Rolla, this feels like the pacing is just always a little off. And the banter is never as snappy as everyone involved seems to think it is. And it's a lot of just like hunky guys sitting around in cozy sweaters on a boat. But there's just something off all the time. And then the violence is incredibly brutal and blunt and quick. And it's like the shifting of gears is always kind of unsettling, and it's never as engaging as it should be. A lot of it takes place in this port city off the coast of Africa, West Africa. And I'm not even sure that they create a particularly vivid sense of place all the time. But this is supposedly the origin story of James Bond, because among the people who are involved in this scheme and the British side of things is Ian Fleming. And supposedly he created the James Bond character on the actual guy, Gus March Phillips, who Henry Cavill plays. So it just feels like a missed opportunity.
Well, Guy Ritchie, need we say more? He's known for brutal, blunt, and quick, violent movies. Sean, what did you think?
I just felt like this entire thing was Guy Ritchie wanting to make his version of Inglourious Basterds. I mean, it is fun. It's a lot of fun. Great team of actors. And it is amusing at times. Its biggest problem is it lacks genuine depth. It has zero character development. It's basically another Guy Ritchie team on a mission caper. I mean, you know what you're going to get when Guy Ritchie directs a film. Sadly, he seems like he's sort of like repeating himself. He's in repetitive mode. So he's not delivering anything new or different. And this isn't as good as some of his previous work.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare in wide release today. Moving on now to an indie film. It's called We Grown Now, and it follows two best friends named Eric and Malik, who are growing up in a Chicago public housing project in the 1990s.
Me and Eric, we've done everything together since we were born.
You got dreams?
Sometimes.
You ever had a dream that felt so real you thought you was awake?
You know, we always wanted better. That's why we came here.
Now how am I supposed to keep you safe?
Okay, Sean, I have to admit I was tearing up at the trailer. So is the rest of the movie, the whole movie, as emotional as the trailer?
100%. I was going to mention, I was not only tearing up during the trailer, I teared up several times during the entire film. I will need a moment to talk about this film because I was completely blown away by every aspect of this film. About two young friends, two Black boys who were growing up in Chicago. They're looking to escape the mundaneness of school, the hardships of growing up in public housing. They live in the notorious Cabrini Green public housing, which has been mentioned several times in the realm of pop culture. It was the public housing unit featured in Good Times. It was a public housing unit featured in Cooley High and even Candyman. They soon find that, you know, there's some challenges they have to deal with as young kids after a tragedy happens in their community. And I will say the one thing about this film, which is beautifully and brilliantly directed by Minhong Beige, is that loss and anguish has rarely been this moving and beautiful. I mean, not just the look of the film, but the meaning behind everything that happens as we examine these two young boys who are growing up in this housing project. And the thing that I really loved about this film is it's void of stereotypes and it's void of racial tropes. The dialogue is so authentic. It beautifully and smartly deals with the effects of crime and violence and death and presents this unique observations on religion, while also presenting the grim realities of these two young boys, you know, dealing with, you know, what happens when you die, what happens to you when you witness this sort of things that happen to people your same age. There's also this strong subplot that deals with sort of trying to obtain the false narrative of the American dream. And it's a beautiful portrait of Black life in a grim urban environment that you rarely ever see that delivers heart. It's done at such a high intellectual level that I've never really seen anything like this done before. And there have been other filmmakers that have attempted to tell these types of stories, but none of them to this effect.
So, Christy, this is the third film from Minhal Baig, and she's worked as a TV writer on shows like Rami and BoJack Horseman. How did she do here?
Oh, it's a gorgeous film. It's visual poetry. I totally agree with everything that Sean just said. It was a big Spirit Award nominee this past year. It was up for Best Feature, Best Cinematography, and Editing. And there's so much gorgeous craft on display here. We heard a little piece of that score, too, from Jay Wadley, which is propulsive and like it's very cello and string heavy. And it really encapsulates kind of the constant state of flux that these kids are in and the wonder, but also the danger that they find themselves in. Both the kids are excellent. I want to mention their names. Blake Cameron James plays Malik and John Knight Ramirez plays Eric. And their friendship feels so true. And the authenticity of the adventures they get themselves into. There's a very sweet little Ferris Bueller's Day Off homage in the middle of it, which I enjoyed very much. But they don't feel like precocious kids. They feel totally authentic at all times. And the way that Minhal Baig depicts their daily life is in the most gorgeous slow motion or in like a reflection of these kids in a puddle on the ground, or you can like a TV gets rolled into their classroom to show them something and you see the reflection in there. And there's just real care with innovative ways of depicting their daily existence. And the adults are all great in it too. So yes, very much a must see. It's beautiful.
We Grow Now in limited release today. Finally, we have a superhero parody. It's called The People's Joker, and it was created by and stars the trans filmmaker Vera Drew. In it, she reimagines the story of the Joker as a trans coming-of-age story, and the comedians Maria Bamford and Bob Odenkirk are in this, starring and in supporting roles. And here's a bit from the trailer.
Gotham City is nothing but neon biker gangs, leather freaks, and cross-dressers. Is that what you want? Come home.
No, I won't, Mom. I'm gonna be a comedian. When I look back on my life, before going Jokeman to Harlequin, so to speak, I wasn't even sure I existed. It's like blurry, cracked mosaic of all these gender revelations.
You mean she's a he?
Okay, Christy, this premiered at Toronto back in 2022, but there was a big problem because Warner said, hey, we own Batman's IP and this was not authorized. And so I guess they threatened to sue. What happened?
So they came to this amicable conclusion, right? And Vera Drew very cheekily refers to that in the very beginning of the film. It's a whole big, long full screen where she's like, this is protected under fair use and da 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 da. And I'm so glad that that's the way that it shook out, because this movie is so strange and singular and original and funny, but also unexpectedly poignant, because what Vera Drew is doing here, as you mentioned, is exploring her own transgender journey, but through the prism of the Batman world. And so it's how she, as a kid growing up, felt different, knew that she didn't totally belong, but through comedy and through becoming this Joker figure, figures out who she wants to be. So it is extremely DIY in its look, and very intentionally so. Vera Drew used to work with Tim and Eric. And so if you know that whole Tim Heidecker, Eric Wareheim style, it's intentionally really rough hewn and absurdist, and it's bad green screen and just jokes that are a little off or like hold on to a beat for too long. It's just a strange world. So that's part of the look of this. But then there's a really wide array of different kinds of animation. Different people put together different parts of it in terms of like there's different kinds of animation, different kinds of puppetry. And so it's constantly alive and changing. But Vera Drew is so likable and so funny. And then by telling her own story in this way, all these deep, vulnerable truths emerge. Like from within this very artificial setting, you feel like she's bearing herself truly. And it's not going to be for everybody. It's a very odd movie, but I love the chutzpah of it all the time. And it's worth checking out. If you like Hundreds of Beavers, if this is your jam, this kind of weird movie, then you will enjoy this.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Color me intrigued. Sean, is this the best Batman film ever made?
No, I'm going to take it a step further. This may be the best comic book movie ever made, because it feels, no, I'm serious. It feels like how a comic book movie should be. It just has that vibe. And I will say, we need more unauthorized parodies, especially if they are as just sharp, insightful, and delightfully entertaining as The People's Joker. I mean, it is a bit schizophrenic, and it is weirdly brilliant. But I love this sort of coming of age tale that pushes the boundary of intellectual property laws and allows the filmmaker to tell their story in such a unique and authentic way. And I will say this, I would not use the strange word to describe this film, because for Gen Zers or anyone under 30, this is their world. This is how they live. They are going to connect with this film for a very long time. I have a 14 and 11-year-old. This is how they talk. This is how they think. These are the things that they're dealing with in their everyday lives. I also like the fact that Vera Drew enlisted more than 100 artists to sort of like, you know, create some of the animation, create some of the CGI work, create some of the puppetry work that really makes this stand out. It's something that you really never seen before. It was like an entire army of Comic-Con soldiers were enlisted to help put this film together. And it gives it such a unique look and a unique feel. And it's way more than just a parody of self-serious superhero movies. It was actually created to denounce labels, and it does such a good job of doing that. This is one of those films you'll want to revisit several times because there's so much going on. It demands multiple viewing. But I love brave Maverick filmmaking because Vera, she swung for the fences and she hit a home run with this. But I think this is going to be a generational classic that people will examine for a really long time.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm sold. The People's Joker in limited release now. Sean Edwards, film critic for Fox TV in Kansas City and co-founder of the African American Film Critics Association. Christy Lemire, film critic for RogerEbert.com and co-host of the YouTube channel Breakfast All Day. Thank you both.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.